Okay. Tonight we're taking a separate topic, the topic of dreams. Every now and then, you know, we come across some things which I think are important, so we might interrupt the general learning Talmud study on the seven laws. This one is, I think, it's pretty important. It's fundamental principles of Judaism emerge from how the Torah looks at dreams, and besides, it's really quite fascinating, and certainly very instructive. The last few weeks, the reading of the Torah dealt a lot with dreams, and of course, with the oral law, which really opens our eyes up to the written law, and shows us, you know, exactly what's going on through their hints and interpretations. With that, we really gain insight into the Torah, and there's one thing I just want to mention about the oral interpretation. I think it's an important principle to remember. That is, the oral interpretation always must render the verse, practically without exception, must render the verse literal. In other words, you cannot, through oral interpretation, give an interpretation that does not fit into the literal meaning of the verse. So the oral interpretation always explains and points out different insights into the verse itself, but you cannot get rid of the literal interpretation. Okay? It explains the literal interpretation, and then when you take a look at it, you see exactly what it meant. I'm going to deal with the with some of the dreams that we had recently in Genesis. The dreams in the Torah, or in the five books of Moses, are found in Genesis. The story, of course, you're familiar with the story that Joseph was imprisoned with these two officers. The one was the butler, chief butler, and the other one was the chief baker. And they had this dream, and they were pretty shaken in the morning. And Joseph was with them, and Joseph asked them to tell him the dream that he might be able to interpret it. And he did interpret it, and as you know, exactly as he interpreted, that's exactly what transpired. Now I'm going to start off with a statement from the rabbis in the oral law, which I believe opens up the whole area. And that is, later it says that this butler, whose dream Joseph interpreted for the good, and Joseph asked him and begged him to please remember him to Pharaoh, in order to get him out of prison, he forgot Joseph. And but then, after 2 years, an incident took place where Pharaoh had a dream, a disturbing dream, and he called all of his wise men, his necromancers, and his magicians, and his mystical interpreters, and they couldn't satisfy him with their interpretation. And then the chief butler approached Pharaoh, and he said to him, "Something happened to me a few years ago where I was imprisoned," and he told him the story, and he said there was there this lad, a Jewish Hebrew lad, and he was a servant, and he was in prison, he interpreted the dream for us. Now, when you take a look at the verses, these verses are found in Genesis 41, okay? Let me just get to the verse that I'm looking for, okay? Now take a look at Genesis 41:11. All right. So Genesis 41:11, he says, "And we dreamed a dream in one night, I and he," meaning the baker, "each man according to the interpretation of his dream, did we dream." And then he says in 12, he says, "And there was with us the Hebrew lad. He was a servant to the to actually this word the I don't know what your translation is. He was a servant to." Some say it means the head butcher, but the uncle is translated as the head executioner. And this will be verified from Daniel, where you have the similar expression, Rav Tabachaya, which means the executioner. So at any rate, I'm just mentioning it aside. So he says, "And we told him the dream, and he interpreted for us, he inter- interpreted our dreams for us. Each man according to his dream did he interpret. That's verse 12. Now let's take a careful look at verse 13. And he says, and it came to pass, as he interpreted it to us, so it was. Okay, now here the rabbis stop. And they say there was no need, really, for him to repeat that, because he just said that he interpreted his dream accurately. It wouldn't be necessary. Verse 13 is not really necessary. Moreover, if you look at the verse carefully and you're sensitive to the semantics of it, there is an implication here. The implication is, as he interpreted it to us, so did it transpire. So did it take place. It's placing the cause and effect over here not properly ordered, because it seems to imply, as he interpreted, so it happened, implying that the interpretation was the cause of what took place. And the rabbis say a strange thing. They say that every dream goes according to its interpretation, based on this verse. Because the implication here is that the interpretation is a causative element in what actually takes place, what actually is going to happen. And the rabbis say that if a person has a bad dream, he should make sure to interpret it, but he should interpret it, he should call his friends and interpret it, and interpret it for the good. Of course, they say that the interpretation must make sense in terms of the dream. You can't just say that any dream is good. You have to have somebody good who knows how to interpret it and to interpret it properly, but it should be interpreted for the good. And the rabbis say that a person should do this. If he doesn't do this, it could lead to some kind of harm. And they base it on this verse, all right? Because the semantics in Hebrew is... again, implies that the interpretation was a causative agent in the outcome, the actual outcome in reality. Now, when we see something from the rabbis like this, it sounds strange to us, because we just read before that the dreams of the butler and the dream of the chief baker, and it would seem that on the contrary that Joseph said to them, you know, tell me the dream, because God does give man insight to explain the dream. And it would seem clear that it's not the interpretation that's the cause, but the converse. The dream really is prophetic. And the interpretation is just interpreting what the dream was. The dream is the cause, of evasion, not the interpretation. Okay? So we're struck with this strange statement from the rabbis. Moreover, what is even more strange about it is that it would seem, according to this interpretation, it would turn out that Joseph really was responsible for killing the head baker, because he gave him a bad interpretation. That's why he got killed, which just doesn't seem to fit into the plain understanding of the text of Genesis. What I would like to show over here is that the rabbis really were giving a very deep insight into dreams and their interpretation, and we will see that if we follow their suggestion, we will be able to understand a lot of what actually takes place in dreams in the Bible, how the Bible looks at dreams, and we'll be able to adduce more evidence for that thesis, that theory. Okay. The statement of rabbis again is that the interpretation is extremely important in dreams. The interpretation, a good interpretation, can cause good results. A bad interpretation can cause bad results. Okay. Now,
Rabbi?
Yes.
Before you go any further, there, and perhaps you're going to deal with this, if you are, I'll just go from there.
Okay.
Obviously, there's a high degree of preparation that is taking place on the part of the person that's giving the interpretation. And do you intend to deal with that, or is your area going to center on just the interpretation themselves?
I will cover that also.
Okay.
But my main focus over here is on the
all right,
what dreams are, how they work, and what how the interpretation works.
All right. Well, I think that it would be good if you know, if you're prepared to give a brief explanation of the preparation of the interpreter.
Okay.
Of what he goes through, that what qualifies him to interpret. Why is Joseph any more qualified to interpret than anyone else?
Okay, I think that.
And you know, you have the magicians, the Egyptians, they're wise men, and he told the dreams to them, and they interpreted. So we know Joseph's come to pass, but why did his come to pass and theirs didn't?
Okay.
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 All right. Thank you.
Okay. Remind me again later if that is not completely answered, because I would hope that from the explanation that this also would be explained. Now, before we go any further, we have to have one more statement from the rabbis. See, the problem with the Talmud is people just take out isolated statements. You have to have the whole Talmud. The rabbis also say a remarkable statement. They say that a person is only shown in a dream things that he thinks about himself during the day. Okay? By the way, Sigmund Freud made the exact same conclusion a few thousand years later. That, as a matter of fact, it's pretty much identical. That what the rabbis say in the Tractate of Brachos is that a person only sees in a dream that which he thinks about or he's ruminating about in his mind during that day, during the previous day. Now, the rabbis show that that idea is not just a medrash, it's not just an oral idea, but actually is part of the written Bible. And they cite Daniel 2:29. Okay? Daniel 2:29 deals with a dream again, another dream of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? Nebuchadnezzar also had a dream which troubled him, and his soothsayers, his necromancers, his magicians could not interpret it. Then Daniel came forth, and Daniel starts his interpretation. But he starts it off with a very strange sentence. He says, it's in 2:29, he says, over there, of course, was a little different, because over there, the king himself forgot his dream. Nebuchadnezzar forgot his dream, and he insisted that his interpreters not only tell him the interpretation, but that they tell him the dream itself, which no one could possibly do, besides Daniel. But when Daniel begins his interpretation, he says like this. These are the words. He says, "You, O king, your thoughts on your bed did go up." I'm giving you a very literal translation. Your thoughts went up on your bed. Okay? Now, the rabbis say, what does this mean? What do you mean your thoughts went up on his bed? What exactly does that mean? So the rabbis say that means that a person only dreams about thoughts that he had during the daytime. These thoughts, thereafter, when he goes to sleep, form part of the dream content, and that's the way every dream works. So the rabbis say that Daniel gave the king some insight in general into how dreams work. And this, I said, psychoanalysis supported thousands of years later. But there is a difference between the Torah's approach to dreams and the psychoanalytic approach. It does deviate. But in this, they're identical. And it's basically a verse in the prophets. Okay, what does it mean when we say that the thoughts... What did Daniel mean? He says, your thoughts that you thought about during the day went up on your bed, which means you dreamt about. What it means is that a person's dreams always express their aspirations, their desires, their wishes. Okay, by the way, this is another thing that Freud says in interpretation of dreams, that every dream is an expression of a wish. Okay? Now, just with those two statements of the rabbis, I want to go back and approach the dreams, the two dreams, one dream of the butler and the dream of the baker, okay? What did the butler dream, okay? Now, that's found in Genesis 40, all right? He says, 49, he says, behold, in my dream, he says, the chief butler... told his dream to Joseph, And he said to him, in my dream, there was a vineyard before me, okay? And rather a, not a vineyard, it's a, no, a plant of the grapes, okay? He says, and on this plant of the grapes were three vines. Then he describes, he says that these vines blossomed, and then eventually they produce fruit. They produce grapes. Then he says, and again, this is in his dream, that the cup of Pharaoh is in my hand, and I take these grapes, and I squeeze them into the cup of Pharaoh, and I give this cup, I place this cup in Pharaoh's hand. Okay? That's the dream. Now, you know that these two men were in prison for crimes. And the rabbis tell us the crimes were that the butler, they found a fly, was found in the drink. And the baker, a piece of gravel, was found, sand was found in the baked goods. And that's why they were put in prison, because they're negligent in their duties. Now, let's take a look at that dream. What does that dream show? Based upon the principle that the Talmud explains, based upon the verse in Daniel, if we say that every dream is really a what the person is thinking about during the daytime, his aspirations, his desires, this dream shows clearly that this man, this butler, his greatest desire is to serve his master, because he sees, you see, a person that enjoys serving his master, he enjoys every part of it, the preparation. And that's why it shows the vine is growing, and he's waiting, and the grapes finally emerge. Then he takes these grapes, he squeezes them, and he produces the wine, and he places it in the hand of his master Pharaoh. This is a perfect description of a person whose aspirations are to serve his master. Okay? So there we see again the principle which is explained in the, based on the verse, and then Daniel explained the Talmud, that a dream is an aspiration. Okay, so when Joseph heard that, he knew something about this man's personality. He knew this is a loyal servant. He could therefore deduce that since this is a loyal servant, the crime of the fly was a complete accident. Accidents happen. It was an oversight. Something went wrong. It was not negligence. Okay, let's take a look again at the dream of the baker. What was his dream? So the Torah says that in verse 17, 40:17, that the baker says, I too in my dream, and behold, there were three baskets on my head, okay? And the uppermost basket was from all the food of Pharaoh, baked goods, and the bird eats them from the basket which is upon my head. All right? What does that show? First of all, you notice there is no preparation. He does not have the love that a servant has to prepare for his master. You see no preparation at all in that dream. Secondly, what do you see? Does he give it to Pharaoh? No, on the contrary, the birds eat it. The bird eats it. Okay? Now, the birds eating it is a clear-cut symbol of the fact that he does not wish to serve Pharaoh. He'd rather the birds eat it. So, again, Joseph sees here is a man who dislikes his master, a disloyal servant, and the logical conclusion, of course, is that the reason why the gravel was found in the food is because he was negligent. Okay? Again, from the dream, you see the personality of the individual. So far, the interpretation is based completely on an understanding of how a dream works, and that it's a wish, and it expresses the intent and the desires of the dreamer. Okay. Now let's go one step further. Somebody will ask, of course, how did he know that the number three in the dream, the three vines and the three baskets mean 3 days? Because that's what Joseph says. In 3 days, that number three means 3 days. And in 3 days, Pharaoh is going to raise you up, and he's going to restore the butler to his original position, whereas he's going to behead the baker. Okay, how do we know that? All right, for that, we have to take a look at the verses that follow in Genesis 40. What happened on the third day? So the Torah explains. The Torah says in verse 20 that the third day was really the birthday of Pharaoh, and he made a party for all his servants. And then he raised up the heads of the butler and the baker, and he determined their fate. Now, what is a birthday? In Judaism, we don't really have birthdays. In Judaism, we have what we call yahrzeit, when a person is deceased. So that day is remembered because the birthday is the day of the. It's based upon a verse in Ecclesiastes that the day of a person's death is better than the day of a person's birth. Because a person's birth, there are a lot of fantasies and dreams, and we don't know which road he's going to take. But upon his death, we know whether he lived a good life or not. But of course, that's Judaism. Pharaoh was not a Jew. Pharaoh was not a man of Torah. Let me put it that way. So Pharaoh, he had a birthday, and he celebrated his birthday. Why? Because a birthday really implies, what is the concept of a birthday? A birthday is an egoistic idea. It means, what it does is, it relates the cosmos to a person, to an event in the person's life, his birth, the most important event in his life. What it does really is give the person a kind of cosmic importance. His arrival is of cosmic importance. That was the day when the sun was precisely in this position, the earth was in this position regarding the sun, and therefore this day has cosmic importance. That's the concept of birthday. That's why the Torah does not recognize birthdays, because it basically stems from man's ego, his desire to have cosmic importance. Now, you can understand why Pharaoh celebrated his birthday, of course, because the pharaohs thought of themselves as gods, actually. So the birthday was really extremely important. That was that certainly to Pharaoh had cosmic significance. He, the god, was born on that day. Now, Pharaoh's birthday, however, was a little different than our concept of a birthday. They didn't sit around and sing, "How old are you now?" It wasn't a just merriment. To him, when he had cosmic importance as a king, that meant that this is an important day for his role, his function of a king, and his exercising his omnipotence over his subjects. And judging the ones, especially the ones that are close to him. Okay? That's why on that day was a day of serious judgment, because this was the day that he, that represented the fact that he was endowed, with cosmic importance as a supreme judge and ruler. So it was a serious day. Even though it was a party, there was a very serious aspect to it. Now, of course, this was not Pharaoh's first birthday. This happens all every year. And you could be sure that the butler and the baker knew very well that this day is coming up. And you could be sure as well that during that day that they had that dream, they were extremely worried, because it was 3 days before their judgment. So in their minds on that day was extreme concern. And that is precisely why their thoughts that night that went up on their beds were the thoughts concerning what is going to happen to them when this day of judgment is about to take place because of their serious crimes. They were concerned. And that's why the dream followed the principle expressed in the Torah, and then, I'm sorry, in the prophets, rather, in Daniel, that the thoughts of the day went up on their bed, and that's what they were thinking about, and that's why they had that dream. Okay, so this explains, that's how Joseph knew that the three were 3 days, because he knew very well that the 3 days, it's the king's birthday, it's no secret. And that's how he was able to interpret and to understand the dream. Now, let me just get to the part that I started off with, what the rabbis say, that verse in 41, that extra verse, which has that implication that an interpretation is a causative element in a dream, and we'll get down to what that means, what practical importance it has in our lives. Of course, it does have practical importance. But let's just take it right now in terms of the dream that Joseph interpreted to these to officers. You see, when Joseph, there's no doubt that when Pharaoh judged these people, he had to show he's a fair judge, and no doubt he interviewed them and spoke with them. Now, you can imagine the butler, after he received the interpretation from Joseph, he felt quite good, and he realized it's true. I am a loyal servant. He had an inner confidence, and especially when Joseph interpreted for the good, he was doubly reassured. And when he went before Pharaoh, Pharaoh saw a secure person, calm, a person who expressed who deserved confidence, and deserved this confidence. And because the interview went very well, and because of that, that played a role in Pharaoh's decision making. Now, just imagine on the other hand, the baker, who really in his dream, his dream showed his personality that he was really disloyal, a disloyal servant, a rebellious type. And when he heard the interpretation that he's going to be put to death, you can imagine how nervous and how upset and disturbed an individual he was. When Pharaoh interviewed him, he sensed this immediately. He could see, this man is disturbed. What is wrong? This person, no doubt, is guilty. That's why he is so worried. That's why he's so disturbed. And therefore, thus we understand the statement of the rabbis that the interpretation of the dream is a causative agent, is just as important, and actually I will show you later that it is even more important than the dream itself. Because the interpretation affects the individual, what the person thinks about that interpretation, how he looks at it, and if it discloses something true about his personality, it will cause him harm, because he will be unable to cope emotionally with his inner self. And when Pharaoh interviewed him, it was obvious to Pharaoh that this man is guilty. So you'll ask me, of course, well, what if Joseph would have given him a different interpretation? We don't know, because Joseph didn't. But it is possible, because the rabbi said that the interpretation was responsible for his death. Now, it is possible, quite possible, if he had handled the interpretation differently. In other words, if he had recognized in himself that he was disloyal, if he would have repented, understood his dream, repented, and then would have gone to Pharaoh with a different kind of approach. He would say, perhaps if he went to Pharaoh and said he was sorry for what he did and he realized that he was disloyal, perhaps he might have had a different, he might have received a different verdict. We don't know, but the rabbis are saying that the interpretation itself is just as important. And because of the interpretation, he was doomed, basically. There was no chance for him to make it after that interpretation. The other way, there might have been a chance. Okay, so the rabbis deduced that from that verse, that the interpretation played a causative role in his verdict of his unfortunate verdict. Okay, now what I'd like to do now is show that this concept is not just something that the rabbis say. Not just.
Are you there? Hello.
All right. So what I want to show is that the Torah never believed that a dream always has some mystical kind of import, some ominous premonition, which for good or for bad. But at the same time, the Torah does believe that a prophetic element can be involved in a dream. Not often, rarely, but it is possible. And I'm going to show you, I want to show you how that works also. But ordinary dreams, the Torah gives no care to. Ordinary dreams, the Torah places no importance on whatsoever. And this can be seen from the Torah itself. Because if you remember when Joseph had his dreams, that's in Genesis 37, okay, so he told them to his brothers, very excited, told his brothers and his father. Well, what did his father say? His father got angry and said to him, and that's in Genesis 37:10, he says, what is this dream that you dreamed? Am I and your mother and your brothers going to come to bow down to you to the ground? So what does Jacob say the sage, Jacob. What did he say to his son? Forget this dream. This is pure nonsense. So you see right there that the Torah maintains that most dreams are simply nonsensical. But the Torah says also that quietly to himself, Jacob kept guarded the dream, which means that he knew that it could be a prophetic element in this dream. All right. But simultaneously, that's why I say the Torah differs from the psychoanalytic interpretation of dreams, because psychoanalytic interpretations only are based on wishes, whereas the Torah maintains that most dreams, it's true, are just based on wishes, and therefore they have no import. But there can be, God can give man a prophetic dream, but you have to know when and where. And basically, when Jacob was reprimanding Joseph, what he told him is, this is a nonsensical dream. What is this dream you dreamed? Are we all going to come, I and your mother and your brothers, to bow down to the ground? This is impossible. Your mother's dead. So therefore, he made it clear to Joseph that this is just a nonsensical dream. Just forget about it. Because he was afraid that Joseph's going to carry on with his dream and the brothers are jealous and they're going to kill him. Now, the brothers also knew this secret, basically, that a dream represents a wish. Because if you see, they were jealous of him because the father showed favoritism to Joseph. That's true. But the hatred was really sealed when, at what point? When Joseph had these dreams. Why was it sealed then? How do we know it was sealed then? How do we know that was the worst thing that could have happened? The answer is, let's take a look at the verses themselves in Genesis. In 37, chapter 37, so Jacob tells Joseph in 13 and 14, he says, go see how your brothers are doing in Shechem, Shechem. Okay? And he goes there. And the rabbis say, it's an interesting thing, when it says that the brothers went to pasture their sheep, so there are dots on top of the S. Before the word sheep, there's an S, which is a word that doesn't have any real translation, but it's a grammatical, it's always there. Or not always there, but it's placed there many times. And on top of this word, there are three dots in the Torah. And the rabbis say, there are dots in the Torah, two dots. So the rabbis say, why are these dots there? These dots are there because they didn't really go for the sheep. They went on vacation, so to speak. They were really upset about the whole episode, and the main reason they went was just to get away and to brood over this whole problem with Joseph. But they couldn't say that to the father, so they said, we're going to pasture sheep, and they did pasture sheep, but their main intent was really for themselves. They went there, they ate, they drank, and they were seething in the hatred for Joseph. Now, of course, the scene was set. They're seething, and the father sends Joseph to go to Shechem and to see how the brothers are doing. And the rabbis say that there are. If you look carefully at the verses, this was actually divine intervention that he should be sent there, because he had to be sent to Egypt in order that the people of Israel should go down to Egypt in order to fulfill the promise that God made to Abraham. Okay, I'm just mentioning it as an aside. But when the brothers see him, here the scene is set. The brothers are seething with his hatred. And they see him coming from the distance. What do they say? They say, behold, who is coming? They said, in verse 18, they saw him from the distance, and before he approached them, they intended to kill him. But in 19 it says, one brother said to the other, behold, this dreamer is coming. Why do they call him this dreamer? The reason is because they recognize that his dreams were egoistic dreams. That's what they said to him right away, if you remember. When he said he had these dreams, first there were the sheaves of bowing down to him, then there were the celestial bodies bowing down to him, what did they say? They said, are you going to rule over us? In other words, is that what your aspirations are? Why? Because they knew that a person dreams what his aspirations are. So they hated him for it, because they knew this idea that a dream represents a wish, and they hated him more because they saw not only is he a favorite of the father, but he really intends and wishes to rule over his brethren. This is an evil man. So they hated him for it. So there again we see from the Torah itself that the Jacob and the children of Israel all knew this principle. namely, that a dream reflects the wishes of the individual. Although, as I said, they all knew that there can be such a thing as a prophetic dream as well. Now, what's interesting is, I just want to mention this now, that the prophetic dream, you see, if you take a look at the verse in Daniel 2:29, which is dealing with a prophetic dream, there, that is precisely where Daniel says to the king, your aspirations went up on your bed. So someone should ask the question, just a moment, I can understand an ordinary dream being a person's aspirations, but a prophetic dream is something different, right? And that dream that the Nebuchadnezzar had was a prophetic dream. So why did Daniel say to him that this dream is a result of what you're thinking about during the daytime? Okay? But the answer is clear. What Daniel said precisely is this, that even in a prophetic dream, the prophecy never just comes in as a separate alien element. It can only come in there if it's in line with the emotions of the dreamer. And this is a very interesting principle in Torah, that God, when God interjects a prophetic dream, of course, is something which God injects into the person's dream. Now, there are prophetic elements there. Now, what the Torah is saying is that those prophetic elements will never just come into the person's mind. It always must be based on the natural dream. That's what Daniel said. I want to tell you that basically this dream, and when I give you the interpretation, is going to disclose a part of your personality. In that, there is a prophetic element. But the prophetic element is never like a separate, magical kind of thing. It always attaches itself to the person's natural emotions. And that is really an important principle in Torah. We say, you see, I mentioned before that when Jacob sent Joseph, that was divinely inspired. And we see, again, if we take a look carefully, in 37, what happened when Joseph, 37:15, Joseph was lost in the field, okay? And a man found him, and the rabbis say this was the angel Gabriel. And that doesn't necessarily mean it was an angel. What it means is, it could have been a person, but it means that that was appointed by God. That man was there because it was God's will he should be there. So God works within the natural framework. In other words, the brothers, God gave Joseph this dream. Now, Joseph was really a person that had these aspirations. He did have aspirations of grandeur, because it says he was a lad, and he was overcome with himself a little bit. He spoke against the brothers. He wanted to be the main one and the main figure in the family, and he had these aspirations. That's why he had that dream. But God attached a prophetic element to the dream. It was prophetic also. Now, the prophetic element in the dream, according to Torah, will only happen based on a substratum of the emotional dream. It's not something new. A person will not get just a crazy prophetic dream. If it's not part of his natural emotions, the prophetic element will never enter. Okay? So now we have an important principle. That's the same way that God works with man in general. That, for instance, with the brothers. It was God's will the brothers should sell him, that he should go down to Egypt and he should be the prime minister of Egypt. That was God's will. But he worked with the emotions of the brothers. The brothers hated him first. Then when he had the dream, it sealed the hatred, but the emotions were already there. You see, God didn't make the brothers hate him. Nothing supernatural in the sense of twisting the person. God never interferes with the person's free will. They made their decision that they're going to hate him. Then God introduced an element which added quantitatively to that hatred, okay? And then Joseph got lost for good reason, because he knew that his brothers were dangerous and he didn't want to go. You don't want to go, you get lost. But it was preordained that somebody should be there and instruct them as to where to go. Okay? They found him. The man found him. So God works the same way as in the dream. The prophetic element is always introduced on a natural element. That's the same way God works in reality with divine providence. that it's always based on humans' emotions. They make the decision first, then elements are introduced. They made the decision to hate him. Then he had the dream, and that sealed their hatred. Then they went to Shechem, where they were brooding over this hatred. Then Jacob decides to send them to find out how the brothers are doing. He wasn't aware of how dangerous the hatred was. And then the scene is set where he is sold down to Egypt. So we find a parallel concept over here between the way God works within the framework of reality and also the way God works in dreams. He does not introduce into a dream something magical, supernatural. It's always tied to the person's natural inclinations and desires and his natural dream. And that you'll find in every dream of the Torah, really. You'll find that in the dream of, you'll find that, for instance, in Pharaoh's dream. Let's just take a look. We'll see. It's interesting. In Pharaoh's dream, where do we see it in Pharaoh's dream? Pharaoh's dream was the fat cows. First there are the fat cows, then the thin cows. The thin cows consume the fat cows, and they remain thin. Okay? Now, what does it have to do with Pharaoh? What does it have to do with Pharaoh's dream? But, if you look carefully, you'll see. What was the beginning of the dream? When he repeats the dream. Not when the Torah. The Torah gives two accounts. First, it gives the account of the dream itself, but then it gives the account of when he repeats it to... The first account. Okay. In the very first account, in 41:1, okay, it says, Pharaoh dreams, and behold, he is standing on the river. Which river? The Nile River. Okay. Now, you know the Nile was deified by the Egyptians, because that was their source of life. That's why Egypt was such a powerful country, because of the Nile. That's why Abraham went down to Egypt when there was a famine. Why? Because there was no famine in Egypt, because Egypt always had the Nile. It overflowed its banks, and the fields grew, and there could be famine in other lands where it depends on rain, but not in Egypt. And that's why the Nile was worshipped. The Nile was also a god. Egyptians had many gods. Now, Pharaoh sees himself standing on the Nile. What does this imply? That he is really the source, the god of the god. He's a higher god, higher deity, you see, because Pharaohs always believe that they are deities. So in this dream where the fat cows emerge, of course, the fat cows are prosperity. He always believes that the prosperity is always from him. You see, the prosperity stems from, because anything that's good that happens in Egypt is because of him. He is the deity. Now, what disturbed him about the dream, you can understand very well, too. What disturbed him about a dream was, when a person is disturbed by a dream and doesn't know the interpretation, it means there is something there, but he can't put his finger on it. What disturbed him was, and when he repeats the dream again, he says, the thin cows ate the fat cows, but he says the thin cows were no different after they consumed those fat cows. Now, that was very scary to him. Why? Because that represented, as Joseph later interpreted, the years of hunger. The years of hunger means failure. As a matter of fact, the Torah says that when Joseph interpreted, he said, you will not remember the good years because of how serious those bad years are. Which means to say that when it doesn't mean remember in terms of your memory traces, it means remember in terms of your feeling. You'll feel like you're a total, the failure will be imminent. What is Pharaoh's greatest fear? That he should fail. And that's why he was so disturbed from that dream, because that unconscious concept of his own failure was being transmitted to him through the dream process. Okay? So again, this dream with him standing on the River Nile is an indication of his own self-glorification, and he is successful, productive, but then the dream had the element of failure. Okay. Now, what I want to show further is what was so unusual about Joseph's interpretation and why Pharaoh was, not only did he accept the interpretation, there was more to it than that, but he took this man and made him the head of his kingdom. He made him decide he was only second only to Pharaoh. And not only that, but he was in charge of everything, basically. Okay? Why did he do that? He had many interpreters all these years. Okay, so they failed this time, but even before, a good interpreter wasn't a person that was cut out to run a country. He's the religious the religious mystic necromancer, interpreter, magician, okay? But he's not the leader of the country. Leader of the country, you need a practical person, not a... you say the Egypt was not was the most powerful country at that time. They weren't stupid people. So Pharaoh knew that those guys belong. That's the religious crew. They stay in their place, but they're running the country. You need a guy that uses his head. It's a different kind of a thing. So why was Pharaoh so excited about Joseph's interpretation? The reason is because Joseph showed him something that he never saw before. You see, when a mystic interprets. A mystic always tells you, and that's the way it is today also, because today, even though we speak about ancient Egypt, we're still very ancient, except for people who believe in Torah, not ancient, but the rest of the world is still ancient. It's still basically in Egypt. I just saw in the news a week ago that they said that 68% of the population believe in guardian angels. They have these little angels they talk to, they pray to, and the sale of figurines of angels is up by, I don't know how much, like doing a wonderful, wonderful business, millions and millions of dollars worth of business, selling these little figurines of angels. This is not much different than the primitive idolatry that the Torah talks about, okay? So the Torah is always on target. The emotion is there, and it'll come out, I don't care if it's the time of Egypt, or if it's 1994. It's there. Look for it. You'll see it's right there. So, of course, you know, it's an interesting thing, but that's one of the things, one of the few things that you're not allowed to draw, even not in three dimensions. In other words, a two-dimensional picture of an angel is a prohibition. You're not allowed to draw a two-dimensional picture of an angel, because angels or the heavenly bodies, because those are the things that people tend to worship more than other things. So certain things you can't reproduce in three dimensions, but in like the figure of a man. But other things, the prohibition is even in two dimensions. A few things. One of the few things is an angel. Okay, it's interesting. So you see, the Torah, the halacha singles out that one because it recognized that emotion. That's exactly what's happening today. But getting back to this, to Joseph, what Joseph did was something totally different, because if a person goes, for instance, to someone to read tea leaves or palms or whatever they do, you know, these type of people today, what they give them is always a doomsday, or else something, either a doomsday interpretation, which means you're doomed. This is your fate. Either it's bad or it's good. Okay, but mostly it's a fate that you cannot escape. As a matter of fact, there are many movies I'm sure you've all seen where these predictions are there. And the movies and fairy tales and stories, and the person tries to avoid it, but in the end they always get caught. Because these things that they predict, or they read the palms, or they read the leaves, or whatever they do, you see, the fortune tellers always predict something which it must happen. Okay? And that's exactly what Pharaoh's interpreters told him. They told him you're going to have seven daughters, you're going to bury seven daughters, yeah, what kind of, but there are things you can't do anything about. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. Joseph was the first one that Pharaoh ever saw that had a completely different idea. He interpreted the dream, which was based on a naturalistic explanation. No doubt Joseph told him much more than we see in the Torah itself. The Torah does not repeat every word of the conversation, and he probably spent several hours with him. And he taught him the idea that there's a natural law. God doesn't intervene with natural law. He does move in on that natural law system at certain times. And no doubt he explained to him what his dream was in natural terms, and then he showed him that there also was a prophetic element involved in the dream. Now, once he showed him that prophetic element involved in the dream, Pharaoh expected him to say, well, that's it. You know, okay, there's going to be good years, and there's going to be bad years. I can't do anything about it. As a matter of fact, when he first told him that, he says the bad years, as I said before, are going to be so bad that you will not even sense anymore that there was a good times. In other words, the good times will be totally forgotten because the bad times will be so overpowering that the whole country is just going to be steeped in misery, and they won't even be able to think about the good times anymore. Okay, so Pharaoh expected Joseph to say, huh, it's a good interpretation. You know, you're right. That is the interpretation. It's my fear of failure, and everything makes sense, and I see it. I'm doomed. But then Joseph said, just a moment. He said, now what you have to do is... By the way, there's another interesting thing, just as an aside. Joseph said the reason why he had two dreams means because it's going to occur very soon. And they're not two separate... they don't have two separate meanings. I'm just mentioning Sigmund Freud says every dream a person has in the same night always is the same interpretation. It's a very interesting correlation here. But anyways, let me get back to the main story. So what happens is, in 41:33, what does Joseph say? Here's where he makes a statement that Pharaoh flipped. He said, and now Pharaoh should appoint a wise and knowledgeable person, and he should appoint them over the land of Egypt. And then he goes into his plan of conserving the grain, the first rationing system in history. Okay? What did that show Pharaoh? What he told Pharaoh was, this God gives man knowledge and information if he's fortunate in certain cases. And in your case, that's what happened. But the knowledge that you have, you can act upon. There's no doomsday, and there's no wonderful day. It's what you make out of it. Now you know what's going to happen. You could be a fool and say, this is going to end doomed. Or you could say, these are the facts. God gave me the facts. Now I've got to act. Now let's get going. Let's not be fools. Let's not waste those 7 good years. Let's start a system, a rationing system. And then, on the contrary, we could be the most powerful in the world, because when you have something that no other country has, you know what happens. You become the most successful, the most powerful. And that's exactly what happened. So Joseph showed Pharaoh that there's no such thing as a predictive dream which dooms you or which blesses you. Dream, even if it's prophetic, usually is not, but even if you're fortunate to have a prophetic one, doesn't mean a thing. It's just information. You've got to act on that information. That was something Pharaoh never heard before. That's why Pharaoh said, you not only have wisdom, that's why he said to his men, he says, did you ever see one like this? He says in 38. He says, did you ever find anyone like this? A man who has the spirit of God in him? He means to say, he's a man, normal person, and he has this divine element of knowledge where he uses in every area. This is an all-around person. He's not a... We can't relegate this guy to the soothsayers and necromancers. This man has total knowledge. He uses his mind in every area. Not only interpretation of dreams, but now what to do? He says, this is the man of total knowledge, a man who has no emotional blocks and always uses knowledge and wisdom. That's exactly what the Torah uses, Navon and Chacham. And Navon means depth of knowledge, and Chacham means breadth of knowledge. So he says, this is the man that is going to be appointed over my kingdom. So now you see how he won him over with the interpretation. But there's one thing I want to mention before I close, and that is that there's one part over here where Joseph took a very, very big chance. And it teaches us to be truthful and ethical. Because when Joseph got that introduction to go before Pharaoh, and it was a beautiful introduction, can't get a better one because it was something that was factual. So when he came to Pharaoh, Pharaoh was looking for him, and he was waiting for him. And what did he say to him? He said to him, when he met him, this is in verse 15, 41:15. He says, I dreamt a dream, and there's no one that can interpret it for me. And I heard about you that you listen to a dream to interpret it, which means you have that ability to interpret dreams. Now, what did Joseph say in the next verse? Beautiful verse, important verse. It says, Joseph said to Pharaoh, answered Pharaoh saying, the word in Hebrew is biladai. Biladai means, it's not me. Okay? God will answer the peace of Pharaoh. And over here, will should be should or shall answer. In other words, God shall answer, should answer. In other words, hopefully God will answer. That the word in Hebrew in the future could mean either will definite or can mean shall. In other words, saying like in Hebrew we say that God will help you. It means God should help you. Okay? That's what Joseph said. What is the statement, it's not me? What Joseph told Pharaoh, and this took tremendous courage, he says, you're looking for a magical person, a person that has these abilities. No one has abilities. Every human being is only a human being. You cannot raise them to a higher level than a human being. Only God is the one that has powers. Man has no powers. And as intelligent as I am, and as much knowledge as I have, and the fact And the fact that I have that knowledge gives me the ability to have a prophetic, to be able to interpret a prophetic dream, but it's all from God. And there is never a guarantee, no matter how wise a human being is. We find the great Moses. He didn't know what to do when, in the case of Phineas, and he just sat there. And he forgot what to do. It was a halacha, actually, and he simply forgot at the moment. The greatest people, there are no such things as heroes in the Torah. As a matter of fact, there's no word in Hebrew for hero, no such word. The only hero is God. And that's what Joseph told Pharaoh. He said, you're looking for me, you think I'm the man, and you're excited about me, you think this is the man who's going to save me. No man saves anybody. I am just an ordinary person, and there's only God. That's the only being that has powers. Now, he took a big chance when he did that, because by doing that, the whole aura that Pharaoh was built up, this aura about him, imagine somebody coming in and say, you're the great man, I'm waiting for you, you know, and you have the ability, and you say, I'm a nothing, it's not me, and I might not even get it. I hope God should answer it. God should answer Pharaoh's peace. That requires tremendous courage, and it shows you that he would not manipulate and seize the moment for his, even though he was in jail, and this was a chance for him to save his life, so to speak, he would not distort reality. He taught Pharaoh right away that no human being has powers. It's only God. And if we think and we use wisdom and knowledge, God may grant us the ability to understand this. But even though we're intelligent, we have all the knowledge, if it's not God's will, we can't do it. So this was this again was something which was a totally different philosophy than Pharaoh, because Pharaoh's magicians and necromancers and soothsayers and fortune tellers, they were people that always maintained they have special powers, and that's where they are today. These people that are fortune tellers, they always maintain they have powers, you see. This is precisely where Joseph came in and showed him the true idea, not the primitive idea which Pharaoh had and which people have today. Not a small number of people have today. So Joseph, by doing that, really showed greatness in that he would not distort reality, even though it could have been in his favor. And it could have even been saying, he didn't know what Pharaoh would do. Pharaoh might have said to him, well, if you don't have any powers, then forget it. Then you're not the man. No, he still